welcome to the
Dragon Tooth.
Welcome to the Dragon Tooth podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jimmy Ma, and I'm being joined with my co-host, who I love to see, Mickey McLeod. How are you today, Mickey?
I'm well.
We are
What's
back,
up, man.
I know, it's good. Nice to see you again. We have, for anybody out there listening to our great podcast, and we think it's great because we love doing it.
It is
still
great. Max thinks so too.
Yeah,
Max says it's great.
It's great.
We are back for episode, I think, 32 today, but we have been on a nice hiatus for the summer break.
Summer break. We
took July and August off.
Yeah.
And we're very excited to sit down today and have a conversation and do the podcast thing and talk about our summer. How was your summer, Mickey?
It's been good. I've been hermiting it up. I went a little portion of it not drinking and then completely fell off the wagon. It's been good summer so far.
Was that my fault?
It's almost over. Could be I'm blaming a lot of people, but you're on the short list.
My summer, on the other hand, has been a little bit more adventurous. I've been away a lot. There's been some weddings. There's been some
shenanigans.
There's been some trips to the island. There's been some trips home to Saskatoon to see the family.
You've been living it up.
It's been fun. It's been a nice, fun summer. I've been enjoying it. However, I will say I didn't hit the beach as much as I would like have liked.
But yeah.
I think I've only spent one day at the beach today.
I didn't get on my bike enough this summer. I know you guys both biked here to the recording studio, aka my apartment. Yeah, I could have gotten the sun more too, but the sun burns my skin. So
yeah,
but also the vitamin D is really good for you, they say. So
yeah, it's good.
It's a toss up.
Yeah, we had a fun summer. You've been DJing a lot this summer too.
Which I did. Nice. Been playing at Mammy Taylor's here and there. Shout out to Ron if you're listening. Yeah, last time was actually pretty good. I actually played like an entire house set. It's crazy.
Are you doing another one of those soon?
I'm not sure. I think we're going to do, he wants to do a Thursday, I believe. So kind of like a city pop, kind of chill indie rock night.
Okay.
But it was super fun last time. I actually ended up playing Shoop by fucking Salt and Pepper, if you can believe it. Had a mini dance floor. It was really good. It's fun. Why I never in a million years thought I would be playing Salt and Pepper.
Hey, by the way, a lot of people have been throwing this my way, but the new Taylor Swift album just came out just really recently.
Oh, yeah? Cool.
Yeah.
Is it hot garbage?
I don't know, but it's weird because I'm starting to find a lot of like men who are like really into this album. Like my buddy Tyson was just like, he's like, the other night we were going out and he's like, can we put the new Taylor Swift on? And
yeah.
I was like, can we just not be friends anymore? Because I was just like...
Well, it's interesting because you look at someone like Robin, right? Who has... She had such a big underground start to her career. And then she just got really poppy. And even a band like Haim, to a certain extent, from LA. If you start with a bit of indie cred first, and then you start getting more exposure to like these bigger studios and better producers and mixing engineers, that like makes your sound like super poppy and super radio-y. So you can't really... I don't know. Pop music is good at its core. It's, you know, melodies we all know and love.
Yeah, but Taylor Swift was like a country girl for the longest time.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like a hip-hop kind of pop star.
I don't know anything about Taylor Swift. I know that Robin, for me, like will always have good street cred no matter how cheesy or poppy her stuff gets. But, you know, case by case, I think.
Okay.
Anyways.
I would sleep with Taylor
really
Swift.
Really rambling.
She's pretty hot.
What's that?
I would sleep with her.
You would sleep with her?
Yeah. Yeah, she's pretty hot.
Very sexy.
Anyways, it's exciting to see you. We're very excited to be back. And today we brought on a recurring guest.
Yes.
We brought on Max Borman, a bartender in the city who is very well renowned. I used to work together with him. Actually, so did you.
Yes.
We first met about 8-9 years ago when I did a training shift with him at Chill Winston when I was working there. And we actually worked together for a couple of years at the Fairmont
Pacific Chill Winston?
Program. Yeah, he did one training.
I did one shift with Jamie and Kelly.
Kelly Carberry.
And then you quit the next day.
I got the job at the Fairmont.
You made the right call.
How long was that decision process? You stewed over that one.
Yeah exactly.
Mm.
But we worked together for a couple of years, and then he went off and worked at Torofuku for a couple of years, and then he was over at Juniper, and then he's been recently working at Poorhouse, and then now he's about to start a new project. So we wanted to bring him on today to talk about his new project that he's been doing with, what's Sean Heather's company called?
Heather Hospitality.
Heather Hospitality. Okay. Yep. So Sean Heather is a... the Irish Heather. And
Salty Tongue Salt.
Yeah. Salt. Yep.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of stuff in the Vancouver market. He's been very renowned for a long time. Kind of for a long time, it was kind of like Sean Heather and Mark Brand were kind of the spearheaders of a lot of the Gastown movement 10 years ago.
Yep.
Opening up a new business in kind of the downtown financial district. Max is shepherding the bar program there, and we're going to talk about a lot of the stuff they're going to be doing there today. I'm very excited because I think their opening is very imminent. I recently also published a pretty big column on Scout, and I want to delve into that because I interviewed Max for that as well. And then we're going to pick Max's brain on a couple other things, but I haven't told him about these questions. But Max, I do have to ask you one question. Who are you picking for the US Open?
Ooh.
So this is what I want to talk about. Max and I are big tennis fans. US Open just started the other day. By the time this launches, it's probably going to be over, but...
What's the US Open?
Okay, we're not... Why am I...
It's the fourth and final Grand Slam of the year in tennis.
Oh, it's a
tennis.
Grand Slam. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Are you talking men or women's side?
So men... Yeah, let's do both.
Doubles, okay,
so
doubles.
Your favorite player is same as mine, Roger Federer.
I love Fed.
Yeah, Fed is my favorite. Okay. Yeah. But I'm picking Nadal for this one.
I'm picking Nadal too. He's looking real sharp. I've only watched, I've been working all week, so I've only watched maybe 20 minutes of tennis so far. But I saw glimpses of Nadal's game yesterday. He was looking hot.
Yeah, look good. You watched part of that Kyrgios stuff?
A little. Yeah. I didn't end up seeing the end of the match though. Yeah. What happened?
I don't know. He's hit some pretty good trick shots yesterday.
He's talented.
He's a pretty fiery player. So.
Mm. He's a bit of a douchebag, but whatever. Nobody is. He is an up-and-coming star for sure. Federer is not looking very good at all. I watched him
in
his match
sluggish
this morning.
His first match. He lost his first set.
Yeah, he lost his first set, and then he lost his first set today too. So, but he was then looking much better after that. But I don't know. I think he's having struggling hitting the ball like properly. He's hitting a lot of mishits and stuff, which is not a good sign. But maybe if he works that out, I mean, he's still a contender, obviously.
He has never had a really good summer since Wimbledon, though.
What is he currently ranked?
He's ranked third in the world.
Third in the world. So it's Nadal. But he did have an amazing match in Wimbledon. Like, yeah, he lost that match. That was just, Djokovic. You know, it could have gone either way. It was heartbreaking, but it was also great for Djokovic.
He lost in the Wimbledon final to Djokovic, and it was the longest Wimbledon final ever.
Djokovic won?
He won it.
No, is he ranked one?
He's number one in the world. He's been number one. He's been the best player in the world for probably the last seven, eight years.
I grew up watching tennis at this time of year, the US Open, but I stopped. So right when Federer, like I'm familiar with like Michael Chang and Andre Agassi and Boris Becker and all those guys. Like,
so you're really aging yourself right now.
You know, Michael Chang was my favorite dude to watch because he was super tiny.
Yeah.
And like his backhand game was like really good and he was super fast. But that's back in the day. I haven't watched tennis.
Pete Sampras.
But I do respect and love tennis.
Yeah, so tennis basically.
Right. It's that Sampras time too.
So Sampras basically left.
I didn't really like him. Actually,
you didn't like him?
Nah,
I don't know.
I didn't like his game.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
too tall. I loved Agassi because he would just like stand on the baseline and fucking rock backhands. At you, and like that was it.
He was talented. He didn't actually like playing tennis though.
I don't know.
Yeah, he didn't really want to be a professional tennis player, and but I think he's. Parents maybe threw him into it and they were like, you should keep going because you're good at it and people will pay you because you beat everybody. So he stuck with it and won majors and, you know, was one of the better players of all time. But
interesting.
He didn't actually enjoy the game all that much.
Huh.
Yeah. Which is really weird.
I will say that Rafael Nadal's arms I just want him to hug me. They're amazing. That's the only thing I know is when and like not let go. And like, just lift me up.
Is that your game moment of the day?
He's looking pretty good. He's looking pretty good. The only thing about Nadal is like, he's the king of clay. And when he gets on other surfaces, it's not like he struggles. He's still one of the best in the world. But when he plays a Federer or a Djokovic, he often won't come out on top.
No.
So
Is that Australian Open clay? What's the clay?
Aussie Open's the same surface as the US Open, which is hard court.
Yeah. Like the last 5-6 matches that he's played against Federer, he's lost.
Wimbledon is grass.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're in the hard court season right now.
You're nailing
it. This is a food podcast.
I
know.
I thought we're doing sports now.
I know. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Max, so you're going to be opening up a new place in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. It's called Open Outcry.
Yes.
Okay. I guess for anyone out there listening, talk about it, because I'm very curious, because I think what you guys are about to start and open is going to be pretty cool for the Vancouver cocktail scene.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you have a lot of great ideas, and judging from what you guys have been posting on Instagram, it seems like you guys have been doing a lot of work and research on this.
Yeah, we certainly have. From what I've seen in terms of the branding, in terms of what Sean's told me about the concept, and now I've seen the space multiple times, been in there. Checked it out. Scaffolding just came down 2 days ago, I believe. Inside the space, there was scaffolding kind of going all the way up from floor to ceiling. So you really couldn't get an idea of how large and open and high the ceilings were. And now you can really see it. So it's really coming together. A lot of painting needs to be done still, but we're hoping to open mid-September, but that obviously, you know, it's already been pushed back a couple times. So we're really we're really gunning for that, and we'll just kind of see where it takes us. But as you know, there's always a million things that come up for opening a new bar or restaurant. But the concept is really cool. There's a lot of historical precedent in that building. It's in the old Vancouver Stock Exchange building.
So that's right downtown, right, just right by the...
Pender and Howe.
Pender and Howe.
Yeah, okay. Howe and Pender, whatever you want to say it.
So it's by the Vancouver Club area.
Very close, yeah. Right down by, there's that new place that just opened down there called Hydra.
Hydra, yeah.
The Exchange Hotel.
Oh, obviously. Hydra just got eaten alive.
Oh, Nightingale's right there too.
Did you guys see
the... Super close.
Yeah, Nightingale's down the road.
I think the Vancouver Sun or something wrote... Oh, no, Neil McLennan from Vancouver Magazine just wrote a scathing review of Hydra.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just saw that. I was just the other day.
I know Neil. He's a good guy. That's interesting. I've never been, but I haven't heard anything terrible about the food.
His review. I just was going through it the other day, and I was just like, "Yee."
Oh, that's new. Wow.
Yeah. So, anyways,
well, better for us.
Yeah.
No, it's really cool. I mean, so that building was built, I believe, in 1906 or 1907. If I have my dates correct, there. I've done a little bit of research just to prep me for this podcast. So, but I think that essentially, because it was erected for the Vancouver Stock Exchange, which was what was there, I guess, pre open outcry. Obviously, it's now long extinct. But it opened. It was I think it was open for like 50 years or something. No, sorry. I think it closed in 1999, where it was amalgamated with like the whole Canadian Stock Exchange, which is like the TSX.
Yeah.
So a lot longer than 50 years, sorry. But before it was the Stock Exchange, it was a vaudeville theater, which is, you know, burlesque, song and dance, a lot of like
magic.
Little vignettes, magic, sure. Yeah, just kind of little funny acts, right?
Yeah.
And so the building itself wasn't that theater. The building that's there now, which was the Stock Exchange building, which is now going to be open outcry, it was actually a different building, which they tore down and built the current building that's there now. Hmm. So to go back to what open outcry is, I guess it's a play on those historical precedents of the vaudeville, the Stock Exchange, and now I guess because of that era, a little bit of that prohibition era aspect.
Mm-hmm. So kind of like the 1910, 20s, 30s.
Yeah, exactly. Era. And sort of like, because it's got so much history of the theater and the Stock Exchange, it's also kind of, we're tying in a little bit of like how Vancouver was built, you know, like the characters that built this city, like the Guinness family who built the Lions Gate Bridge using the same architect of the Golden Gate Bridge. We've got a mural on the wall that's going up. That will have, you know, all the characters that have kind of helped shape the history of the town and some of the current actors out there and characters out there. So there is a lot of history, and so the cocktail menu is kind of reflecting that history as well, which is kind of cool. So I've done a ton of research to build a cocktail menu that sort of resembles that theme, which is really cool. And the food is sort of following a similar vibe as well.
It's more bar or more restaurant? Is it going to be?
It is. It's a restaurant,
okay.
Technically, but it will come across to a lot of people, I think, as the vibe of a cocktail bar,
okay.
With, you know, like a lot of tapas, but a lot of hot food and shareable plates as well.
Okay.
But definitely harkening back to that era of like, you know, when times were good, you'd go into the bar and have a 4-martini lunch and prawn cocktail and, you know, maybe some oysters. I don't know if we're having oysters, but, you know, some charcuterie and chicken liver pate and all those rich foods. But also we'll appeal to the, you know, the newer vegan crowd as well. So we'll have a lot of really cool options like that too.
You know, it's kind of funny is when I think of that era, I mean, obviously that's almost, I mean, if we think about it now, it's almost like
golden era of cocktails.
Well,
people call it that.
No, that was a little bit earlier, wasn't it?
That was a little earlier. That was like the Belle Epoque, like kind of like turn of the century,
1890s,
which is when the vaudeville theater element comes into play. But we're also taking into account that Prohibition era, which...
So 1920s and up.
Yeah, but I mean, Prohibition BC ended in 1921, which is really, which is an interesting part of the history here as well.
We had Prohibition here?
We had Prohibition from 1917 to 1921. Yeah.
Why was that? I wonder why it was happening around all that time. Like, I wonder what caused it. Like, why? Because, I mean, the Americans was from 1920
to 1933.
Yeah, 1933. So 13 years ago. But it's like, I wonder what sparked it around that time. That's right around the end of the First World War. Right. I mean, cocktail culture really took off around 1880 to like up until that point. It's it's interesting that like, I mean, I can understand why Canada followed suit, or at least BC. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting to think like what, if there was like a moment or a thing that caused like what people were just drinking too much, or I don't know.
I think that's part of it. I mean, if you look at history, people now are drinking less and less for sure.
Yeah.
So if you take like 1900 as your starting point and 2019 as your end point, people have slowly been drinking less and less over time. I'd say definitely less. Less in the past 5 to 10 years.
I'm sure my liver would have a conversation with you on that one right now.
Yeah. Jamie's drinking more, but there's well, an exception to the rule.
Totally. And I think a lot of us definitely are in this industry and we do tend to drink more than the average person, but overall society is drinking less, much less now than they did, you know, Prohibition era times. But so maybe it was spurred on by that. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't alive back then, but
that's like almost 100 years now. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah. But interestingly enough, because the prohibition ended in, 1921 here, and it kept going well into the 30s in the States, Vancouver, because it's a port city, acted as a, you know, major hub for gangsters and bootleggers and speakeasies, because even though prohibition was lifted here, there were all these hindering liquor laws still that were from prohibition, where you couldn't open up a bar, or it became extremely expensive to do so. And so speakeasies stayed prevalent until the 1950s. So, and then on top of that, because it's port city, you got the bootlegging going on. So we had a lot of, you know, speedboats going down in a game of cat and mouse with the Coast Guard, taking, you know, Canadian hooch down to the States, like as far as California. So, you know, we got some cocktails that kind of pay homage to that as well on the list.
Was that kind of the fun part about doing all the research?
It was so much fun just trying to learn all this stuff and see where we could fit in any little bits from that history into the cocktail menu was a lot of fun. Yeah. That's the joy of my work.
Was there something that you came across that kind of like blew your mind a little bit that you're like, holy shit? Or
that did. The fact that prohibition era thing with, you know, the States still carrying it through into the 30s and us just bootlegging a ton of stuff down there. Like, I didn't really know that until I really started digging into this.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what vaudeville theater was, I don't think. I mean, I'd kind of heard of that kind of style, but I didn't know that that was what it was called.
Mm-hmm.
So like just learning some of these terms, some of the history of Vancouver, has been a thrill for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to try to implement that in, obviously, the program? It sounds like you guys are going to do that with the cocktail program and stuff like this.
Yeah.
But are you guys going to do that thematically with the way the room feels and looks? And
that's a great question.
Attire and...
Yeah, so certainly. St. Marie's designed the place, which is... they're sort of the best in terms of restaurant design. They design a lot of other spaces throughout the city as well, not just restaurants. But I think restaurants are sort of... They're quite passionate about it because... It's a space where a lot of people will get to come in and out of and see their work. And so they put a lot of effort into spaces, and they've done places like Kisa Tanto.
They did Botanist.
They did Baobay, I believe. They did Botanist, and they did Savia Volpe, I think. Yeah. So these are some of the best restaurants and bars in Vancouver. So the fact that we have them on our side is definitely a great jumping off point. So we've got to, you know, make sure that the cocktails follow suit and sort of everything kind of works as one, rather than the cocktails being over here in left field and the design being over here in right field. Everything kind of is centered. And the design is being done by another really good company called Glassford Walker, which they sort of really know how to push out a brand's image and make it very understandable to a large demographic, which is important as well. So everything kind of follows this theme of, like, you know, the history that is involved, the vaudeville, the prohibition era stuff, the stock exchange. And so there's a lot of cool, like the mural, like I was saying, is very neat. We've got really high ceilings, really neat chandeliers that are going in. The color scheme, even we're getting this thing, it's like a ticker tape thing that prints out tweets. I'm not exactly sure how it works. But like, I think basically if you go in there and you tweet something about us, it'll print off on this ticker tape, like from the stock exchange. And it's an old vintage like Art Deco style ticker tape machine that is from the Dow Jones Stock Exchange.
Crazy.
From that time.
Yeah.
And we've refurbished it to sort of have on the floor, and you can go and grab your
tape. Interesting, because that, so when this, when the first, I used to work at a place called the New Bohemian in Kitsilano, just on West Broadway. This guy Ivo, who actually started Meat on Main. So he's the guy who started, I can't remember his last name, but he had done a previous place downtown. What was that place called across from the, remember the that big mansion on Davie Street? That was like a macaroni place?
Mansion on Davie Street.
Yeah, just close, going down to the beach, there was this huge mansion that was a restaurant. It's closed down since, but.
Oh, okay.
It's escaping right now, but there was a place across the street.
Yeah.
That he used to run forever for like 10 years in the city. This is in like the 90s. So then he started the New Bohemian, but this was kind of the time where like sort of cell phone culture was kind of just taking off. And he had, I don't know, so like iPhones came out in what, 2006, I guess?
2007.
So he actually had at this place called the New Bohemian where I worked in 2009, something exactly like that, but it was like a little stock exchange ticker, like on the wall, like you would see your, you know, Dow Jones things go by and your stock prices up or down, but it would, you could do the same thing. You could text, be at the place and text something and it would read across the screen.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Really interesting. I've never heard of that before, but that's like something that people will instantly gravitate towards. For sure,
I think so. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Really interesting.
And I mean, I don't want to give too much away. Obviously we still have to work on these things, and obviously we're opening and we're doing a soft opening. So a lot of this stuff might come in, you know, and be implemented like later on down the road once we're kind of off on our feet and running. But it is a really cool concept. And I think that things like that, to kind of go back to Jamie's article that just launched last Thursday, like if people are drinking less, if people are going to bars and sitting on one or two drinks as opposed to having four or five, like some of us might do on our spare days off, you know, like people are looking for something extra. People are looking for another reason to be in your establishment. So you have to figure that out. You can't just make great drinks. You know, you can make, everybody makes a good Negroni. It's easy. You put an ounce of every liquor that's in there and you've got a Negroni. Like it's really freaking easy stuff. That's not why I'm paid to do what I do. I'm paid to do what I do because we have to deliver on things that modern society is looking for, rather than, you know, 10 years ago it was, can you make a good Negroni? Now it's, yeah, of course you can make a good Negroni. What else have you got? And so going back to Jamie's point of what is the rest of the concept, not just the drinks, kind of speaking to the vibe and to the brand, everything has to work together. So that's the biggest thing.
What I think is super interesting is, I mean, it does. I find this super fascinating about someone like Sean Heather or anybody who actually just wants to get out there and do a restaurant or a bar. Because our society is so in tune nowadays with food culture, I actually just finished reading a great book by Kevin Alexander, who's the national food writer for The Thrillist. And his latest book just came out. It's called Burn the Ice. And it talks about the kind of the rise, and it's kind of touches, it's, I thought it was super ironic in the sense that my column that I just came out with Sco is called Have We Hit Peak Cocktail Enthusiasm Here in Vancouver? And it's interesting reading his book, which just came out like 2 months ago, kind of referencing similar thematic feelings that I was feeling. And what it was coming at was that, like, basically from 2006, this is where his book starts. And he touches on how the kind of the food revolution that we now see prevalent in major American cities and all over the world, and especially here in Vancouver, how people's palates and restaurants and just the kind of the new world of way we see dining and restaurants opening up now, and people's expectations change. And what he was writing about is how everything evolved kind of like from Portland to Nashville to San Francisco to New York to LA to New Orleans, and then cities like Vancouver and Toronto. So it eventually kind of gravitated and picked up on these things. How we've kind of come to a point now where we're kind of like peaking, but it's not peaking. It's just kind of like how this part of what we've just seen, as Max just alluded to, is that like 10, 12 years ago, it was, can you make a good Negroni? Now, what he was touching on in his book and kind of what I was touching on with my column is that, okay, everyone can do that now.
Yeah.
You can go to the Cambie or you can go to some dive bar, whatever, and you can probably get a good old fashioned, a good Negroni. I guarantee the bartender there probably gives a shit. But now it's kind of like, what else can you do? And what are the other things that, that are really important to diners and customers? And especially in this age of hyper social media,
hyper stimulation too.
Yeah. And where people are really like when you go to a restaurant, it's no longer, I've talked to this with Grant Seating, my bar manager, but it's like, you can make a cocktail, but the cocktail has to look just as good as it tastes, which is super interesting because it probably used to never, bartenders a lot of times used to never probably think that way, but now you kind of have to.
Yeah.
Same thing with plating of food, because the first thing what's going to happen when people do is they're going to take a photo of it. And just like when you're touching about this Twitter feed or Instagram or anything, it's just interesting how people are so aware and so in tune of what they're looking for that I can't imagine some of the pressure that you guys feel, because to open up a new restaurant right now, not only does it cost a fortune, but you have to be so creative and cutting edge, just be unique and novel. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think what you guys are doing right here is, I think, really cool, because Vancouver hasn't really had a really great novel cocktail bar in a while.
I agree.
It's been, we've got Diamond and we've got Kiefer.
It also sounds fun, though.
It sounds like a lot
of fun. Well, it is fun. And something that we haven't even talked about yet, the cocktail trolleys. Like, we're, you know, to go back to Sean Heather just for a second, I think one of the main reasons I wanted to work for him is because I wanted to learn again. And being at Juniper was amazing. And I did learn a lot there. But then I was, you know, in charge. And I didn't have someone above me who knew more than me, who had more experience than I did. So it was nice to be able to go in and he'll just, you know, put you in your place and say, you know what? I really like this idea, but I want to think about it. Or we've got this and this and this. I really want to do this, because he had all this research, right? All this historical research that he had been through. And he'd seen a lot of cool concepts, you know, for example, how do you deliver on this theater element? How do you incorporate that into a bar? And so the cocktail trolley thing started to become a thing. And he did some research. He just went to London a month ago and went to the Connaught Bar and Duke's Bar, like some of these places that are doing tableside martini experiences. Mm-hmm. And so we've been really working on these cocktail trolleys so that we can incorporate theater directly at your table. Like, you go in and you want a martini, it's going to be served right next to you, you know, with a whole song and dance that goes with it, if you want it that way. Although, you know, if you just want to talk to each other and tell us to fuck off, that's fine too.
Right.
But that option is there, which I think, you know, we have never seen that here in Vancouver. It's something new, something really exciting. Designing these trolleys has been a chore, to say the least. But
yeah, because you're the one building them, right?
I'm building them. Yeah, I've never built anything in my life. but
that'd be super sturdy.
But again, you know, that's why I wanted to work with Sean, because I'm learning again. Like, even if it's learning how to build a freaking trolley, it's cool, man. Like, it's been so cool, and you should see them. Like, they're starting to look like they're supposed to be in an Art Deco sort of room that looks amazing, and, you know, like they're coming together nicely. So
how many are you gonna have?
Cool.
There's gonna be three. Yeah. I think if we have to build a fourth, we might have to build it, but I don't think there's gonna be room for more than three.
Okay.
Yeah, there'll be three. So
is it something like where someone sits down and goes, barkeep, can I have a cocktail?
Hopefully. Yeah. I know people don't really like people snapping at you when you're, you know, snapping your finger or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, the place is called Open Outcry.
Why do people get insulted by that?
I don't really understand. Like, you're going to a bar and you're paying $17 for a cocktail and you want it. Like, I went to a restaurant that I won't name the other day to just grab a counter sandwich, and I was standing there for like probably 3 minutes, and I was the only person standing there. And there was a lady at the cash register, sort of like dealing with another guest. And I'm looking at the sandwich guy and I'm like, hey, I just want to get a sandwich. And he just ignored me. So then eventually I never do this, but I was like, hey buddy, I want a sandwich. Can I please get a sandwich? And I felt like such a dick, but yeah, it was the only way to get his attention. I had work to do. Like, I wanted to go there to get a quick sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, and that, anyways, so when people snap their fingers, I'm like, yes, like, you're here paying $18 for a drink. I'm sorry, but I'm going to serve you that drink. I want to keep you happy so that you come back, so that you tip me as well. Like, obviously, there's a, there's a fine line. If somebody's, you know, telling you you're a fucking idiot, I hate your drinks, or I can't believe you, you know, spilt my water or something, that's different. But I had that happen to me once in Australia. A guy told me that I was a fucking idiot. I was. I knocked Stella Artois onto his shoes and it broke.
Right.
And he was like, he looked at me, oh, you're a fucking idiot. And I was like, sorry, man. Like, what do you want me to do? Accidents happen.
Shit happens.
And he just walked off.
Anyways. You know, you can tell us that sounds
by the way. Slightly overboard.
No, I won't. But it's a great spot. And the sandwich was fucking delicious.
Yeah. There's definitely a way that it's a fine line, like you said, but there's something to be said for someone who aggressively orders a drink in a polite way, right?
Totally.
And I feel like that's kind of maybe what you're thinking of, Jamie, is that sort of like, that's kind of like the style.
Totally.
Quick, fast.
A la, you know, Roger Sterling from Mad Men.
There you go.
Garçon.
Well, I mean, that's...
Check, well,
I mean,
please, kind totally. Of thing. So when I think that's
of,
funny.
When,
but...
I, when I think of what you're trying to achieve here with this place, is,
it seems like it would fit.
Well, I have three reference points in my head. I think of The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think of the movie The Aviator.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, because it's based around the 1920s, especially when they have that big ballroom thing. I just think of that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think of swinging girls, and I think of like dancing, and I think mm-hmm. of just like loud music.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think of, you know.
Yeah, weird. It's going to be fun music in there for sure.
And then I think obviously of Mad Men a little bit, even though that's obviously a different era.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely get that kind of sense and that kind of feel.
Yeah.
And you kind of hope that, like, you know, that you're going to get that kind of crowd there too. People are going to want to dress up a little bit and be a little bit more excited and feel a little bit more.
It's got to be fun.
Yeah.
It's got to appeal to the, you know, the business crowd, but it's also got to appeal to the fun crowd. That's, you know, your locals and your artists and that kind of thing. I mean, the name Open Outcry, even that sounds like a loud name. That sounds like a fun, let's go there kind of name. Obviously I should talk about the name. The Open Outcry is actually the name of the language, the hand language used back in the day to buy and sell stocks. So, you know, back in the, you know, they, I'll buy, please. And there was a hand signal for that. So in, I guess going back to the hand snapping, garçon, like it's whatever, like that's kind of fits our concept.
Yeah.
Like I would almost encourage people to do that. I don't know how thrilled my bartenders will be if I say that, but yeah.
Like the snap with, that's what we get a lot at the airport. We get really sort of our friends from the South, some brash.
Yes.
You know,
totally.
They have a lot of money and that's how they order. They snap and they point at their drink.
Well, why can't make it work?
Yeah, I mean,
we're going there. We're doing
like
that.
I said, it depends on the situation, but I will go there and I will snap at you and point at my empty glass.
But sure. It'll be you. So I'll just like walk away. Like,
But it's definitely interesting. Cause that's, even before when you were talking about the concept, and I was on the Scout magazine and saw the article and the original historical picture of that place, and it's beautiful, gorgeous room. But that's kind of like the vibe and the feeling that I get, and what I mentioned about golden cocktail era. That's
totally
what I think of when I think of that. I think of the 20s because that's just like my reference point. So
yeah,
so really,
and if people want to call it the golden era sort of place, like no problems with that. Like.
Yeah.
Call it what you want to call it. It's fun.
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't make you think that why there hasn't been something like this previously with sort of the historical reference points that we have with the speakeasies and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Where that there's, you know, there's a place called the Speakeasy on Granville. It's a fucking shithole. A
bit different than what we're going
bit different,
for.
Yeah. But it's interesting that there isn't a concept that's kind of like unfurled a little bit in the history of, you know, the cocktail boom in the last 10 years or 12 years or however it is, but. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, there's a lot of great cocktail bars in this city, but I mean, going back to Jamie's Scout article last week, I think a lot of the bars are really their restaurants, you know? You have to have good food. You have to have good drinks. You kind of have to have it all because, I mean, you can't open up a liquor primary license. It's very challenging to find one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're expensive and they're difficult to get. So. You kind of have to be a restaurant to be a bar. So, I mean, we're trying to go for a little bit of all of that, you know, a little bit of that slice of everybody's pie.
Mm-hmm. And the vaudeville thematics to me are really interesting. I don't know if you guys know the place XY that just closed down. So they were affiliated with 1181 on Davie Street.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a cab. It's surprising you guys don't know about it. It's probably why it shut down. So they were doing
what was this
cabaret.
Place?
It's called XY. So it was the old Juniper, or sorry, the old Jupiter Lounge. I said Juniper.
Jupiter.
Yeah. Never Jupiter Lounge. So it's on Davey and Jervis up top. I actually used to DJ there way back in the day. But anyways, so Jen Mickey, who owns 1181, which recently she sold to one of the bartenders, and now it's they kept it the same concept. She actually opened a place called XY and vaudeville, cabaret, musical style entertainment was their thing. And cool. I thought it was super, super cool and super, super interesting. Mm. Unfortunately, they didn't get enough traction. And after 4 years, they had to close down. But combining those theatrical themes with a dining experience to me just seems like something super interesting. And I've actually said, shout out to Jen, if you're listening, that XY had to close down. But
yeah,
I don't think enough people in Vancouver, sorry to cut you, do cool shit like that. And I wish that our city had more stuff like that. Like we have, you know, obviously burlesque is pretty big with Kitty Nights and all this other happens, but you know, and drag as well. But I wish we had more sort of that culture here in the city.
Totally. Yeah. I don't really know why that's not been a thing. I guess people are stuck on opening up restaurants instead of, you know, bars that have themes and mm-hmm. that have that song and dance element to them.
Yeah.
It's Vancouver can be a bit stuffy sometimes.
It's the risk, right?
It's risky. I mean, you look at Dark Manor, that's a themed bar with an interesting concept that might work in a larger city, but just
it lasted like
for
what,
some reason didn't last here.
Yeah,
it lasted something like I think 9-10. But which is a shame because I mean I know a lot of the people that work there and they're great bartenders. Everybody was talented that worked there, but it just didn't work here, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean there always is a risk with opening up any restaurant or bar. And if you're going in a theme direction, yeah, I don't know.
You better hit it.
You better knock it out of the park.
Because it's expensive to open up a place.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think a lot of it is location. Like, yeah. I think Dark Manor might just have been a bit too far out.
Yeah.
Where was it?
It's Fraser and like, what,
oh, Fraser.
30th, 40th, yeah, something?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff up in that area now. There's like,
there is.
Not up at 30, 40, down. Got to be down by like
26.
26. Maybe it might have been further down than I think. I'm not exactly sure where it was. But I mean, Open Outcry is right downtown. So,
yeah.
And there's a ton of stuff that's going on around there and a ton of stuff that's being built around there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great location and I think it'll do great. I really do.
Can you give us a little bit of insight into your cocktail program?
Is there a Gassy Jack cocktail?
That's a good name for a cocktail.
That's the only historical figure I know.
do you have a kind of a theme or do you have some ideas? Or?
Yeah. So, well, I don't want to give too much away. Because I'm actually going to meet with Sean right after this to talk about the cocktail menu. He's finally seen it, and we need to talk about how we're going to present it a little bit more.
Is it done?
Well, it's getting close. I'd say it's maybe 90% of the way there, but there's probably a little bit of work that I'll probably work on the long weekend coming up here.
A lot of originals and a lot of... refashioning of old stuff.
There's a lot of classics, actually, because classics were sort of a thing of that time. And so I got a whole bunch of sample bottles and, you know, lots of cognac, rye, bourbon, gin, and, you know, mezcal wasn't a thing back then. So there's no mezcal drinks because why would you?
I respect that.
I love mezcal. Well, so I'm very sad by that, but we will have it as an option because people will want to drink a margarita with mezcal sometimes, but there are no mezcal cocktails because that doesn't make sense for this concept. There are some really cool classics that I have taken and probably made, you know, I probably made 10 sidecars just at home in the past month or two, just tweaking the recipe, just getting it exactly to where I think it really pops.
Mm.
And I don't think that I know that, you know, if you can go to the Poorhouse and you can get a fantastic classic cocktail, you can go to, you know, Hawksworth and get a fantastic classic cocktail. But I think that if they're listed on your menu, you've got to make sure that they are like the best possible version of that drink. So that's kind of what I've worked on for one of the pages. There's going to be a page of originals and cocktails on tap and stuff as well, just to kind of keep up speed. You know, it's 88, 90, I think it's 100. Something seats now, so we're volume driven. We've got to be fast. So I think that having, you know, a Moscow Mule or a Negroni or something like that on tap is going to help our bartender on the main well just like bang them out quick.
Yeah,
but they're still classics. Kind of keeping with a bit of the trend of what's going on in society, we're going to have some zero proof and low ABV drinks as well.
Awesome.
Which is cool. But at the same time, I don't want to have like 30 or 40 drinks. I want to have 20 to 25 tops and keep it, you know, people when they go down and they sit at the bar and they open up a really beautiful cocktail book. I mean, it depends where you go, but I think that because this is downtown and because this is Vancouver, people are just thirsty. They want to open up a menu and look and be like, okay, I want that. They don't want to read a book. So there'll be a bit of a story and, you know, some setting of the tone of that historical stuff that I was talking about earlier. But at the end of the day, it's going to be Moscow Mule, vodka, lime, ginger beer. Boom. Oh, I get that. Boom. We want it to be simple, right? And we want people to drink and we want people to have fun and we want people to have two or three instead of one or two.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't want to say too much more than that about the cocktail menu, but because I do have a little bit more work to do. But definitely some classics, definitely some originals that, and the originals that I've incorporated are very much to do with elements that we've all talked about here. You know, like Great Gatsby. There's a cocktail that actually is kind of inspired by the Great Gatsby. There's a cocktail that's inspired by the rum running or the booze running that went on during when, you know, sort of after Prohibition ended here in BC, but was still going on in the States. Mm. There's a cocktail that's inspired by, I'm drawing a little bit of a blank right now. I'm not going to lie. But there's some, there's some really cool stuff. And it all sort of harkens back to what open outcry is supposed to be. And I think that's important. You're designing a cocktail menu, obviously, and you can overanalyze it. At the end of the day, we just have to open and see how it plays out. People are going to love it. I think. Yeah. It's going to be a fun bar. The cocktails are going to be tasty.
Would you like to go there, Mickey?
Well, the last three times I've been at the Kiefer Bar, I drank a Tiger each time. I don't know, it's weird. That book, like, it's overwhelming to me, but
that's the thing.
I'm also not, I never gravitated towards that total like nerdy side of cocktail bartending because I've never worked at a place like that. Right. Yeah. I've always been like super interested and like, you know, I have people in my life like you and Jamie who keep me sort of abreast of that, what's going on, but I've never been one to,
So you will come with me is what you're saying.
I will. Of course, absolutely. I'll come. But do we have Tiger on the menu? But that's interesting because that fits the theme of the Kiefer, right?
Do you have full say on the whole, full say on the whole program, like wine and beer as well?
The wine and beer, not as much. I haven't had very much input on the wine side. That's been more our general manager, Jeff. His name is, the wine is going to be pretty good. But the thing is, we don't have a ton of space to store much really of anything. So even like our booze, like I'm a little that's my main concern is like, where the hell are we going to put all this stuff? Mm-hmm. But so the wine is more his thing, but I've tasted some of the stuff that he's bringing on and I know a lot of the reps that he's been in touch with. And it looks like it's going to be a great, really well curated list. It'll be tight. Like it won't be a super, it's not going to be 250 wines. It's going to be like 10 to 20 sort of thing. I suspect. The beers, mostly Sean. Guinness, obviously, he pours the best Guinness in the city at the Irish Heather, in my opinion. I love Guinness, but they get very fresh Guinness. I don't know what their source is or how it all works. There's a lot that goes into it, though, because Guinness is made in so many different places. Anyways, I'm not going to touch on stuff that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but Guinness is going to be on the menu, I believe. And just some regular generic sort of beers. We're not going to get too craft, but there will be some canned and bottled options that are from local breweries that are really great. I'm a big fan of Yellow Dog. I'm a big fan of Four Winds.
Oh. Have you had their Squirrel Chaser?
Oh, it's insane.
Unbelievable.
It's so good. I really want
like
that to be on the menu.
It's easy pale ale. It's unbelievable.
It's so good. I that actually is on the current beer list that I've worked through. Fuck. But again, amazing. Meeting with Sean today. We'll see if it gets the final word of approval.
You just warned Mickey's
way
heart.
Better than Tiger.
It is. No, Tiger's great. It's just different, and it fits the theme of Kiefer, not so much the theme of what we're
exactly.
doing. So,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, and not to you know, Kiefer Bar is great, but yeah, I think you know people do get a little overwhelmed sometimes. I don't. I go in there and I'm like, okay, you know, I kind of like know I'm going to have three or four or maybe five or six when I go to the Kiefer Bar. Yeah. So I'll go and I'll be like, okay, I'll get one off the first page this time. And I'll go like, okay, boom, I'll get that. And I just point my finger and order it.
Yeah.
And the next cocktail comes and I'm like, I'm going to get one from this page. Boom. But like, I don't read the whole menu.
Yeah,
a lot. So, or I get a Tiger. But it's, I mean, you go there to have a good time. Kiefer Bar is a great bar.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people are going to go to Open Outcry for similar reasons. They're going to go there to have a great time, but it's a different concept. So, you know, you want to get a cocktail served table side, which is kind of neat.
Totally.
So.
Are you going to be like couches and stuff?
I'm not sure about couches. I think it's more like banquettes. And banquets, like you call it like booths and stuff.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know for sure. I've seen the floor plan like a million times, but it's been a while since I've looked at it. I think it's more banquettes and stuff like that.
Okay, cool.
And the bar stools are cushioned with nice backs to them, so you can get comfortable and sidle up at the bar for a few. That's my number one pet peeve in bars, is that if they don't have a back to their chair, drives me nuts. Like, sorry, really? But I'm getting old.
I've heard varying opinions on this. I've heard some people say that it's closing the bar, but they don't like them. They like having the bar where people can kind of see your back and kind of keeps it open.
True. Yeah.
And then I've also seen other people who like it because then people get a little more cushy and comfy and then they tend to sit longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of torn on this one because I used to think I like back.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think, do I really like backs? I don't know. It's an interesting.
I've never thought about that in my life to this moment.
Well, it's
a good point, actually.
I don't know what I would pick.
I'm retarded sometimes, and I just, for the longest time there, I would go into any new restaurant or any bar that I walk into, and my brain just naturally just goes right into, like, designer mode. I'm like, would I have done it this way? Would I have done it this way? Like I walked into that Ballyhoo, the new Donnelly thing that's right across from Scotia Center downtown, and it reminds me of, like, a 1950s, like, LA bar, but it's, like, super beautiful, and it's pretty, and it's the same guys who did Sing Sing, you know, all those guys.
Yeah.
I'm in there and it looks rad and it looks super nice in there. And I'm just like, wow, this is really designed really well. But my brain just naturally just goes into like, would I have done it this way? Would I have done this and this and this and this? And it's
totally
just,
interesting.
I don't know. I mean, I find that super interesting. I also want to touch on the idea like what we all kind of agree on with the Kiefer Bar, because Kiefer Bar, I call it the black hole, because every time I go in there, just for some reason, turn out blackout drunk.
Yeah.
Because it's just dark and loud and fun. And I never look at the cocktail list. I just walk in and I'm like, yeah, I'll take a Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I'm like one of those guys that's just like, I already know like the five or six cocktails that I always like, and I'll just generally get them.
Make me whatever if they're not busy.
Nah,
you gotta
like,
know the bartender.
I don't like their pineapple.
Come in and be like, make me.
Like sometimes I'll do that, but I also feel like that's kind of being a dick, because sometimes the bartender's like, dude, just make a like.
Why people ask me that question? Make me whatever you like making right now. I'm like, here you go, fuck you.
You should fuck a soda.
But some bartenders will really like that, and
I know
I think you can actually be exposed to, like, when I went into the pack room. Last year maybe, and Sean was working at the
bar. Sean loves
he was
stuff.
Working on some. I'm like, I'll have one of those. So, yeah, totally. But you gotta be kind of careful.
Yeah, like totally. Max, you actually like doing that. You like when people ask you to make them some whatever.
You're pretty, yeah, you're I love really to freestyle. I've been behind the bar now in a few months, so
yeah. Are you done? You've been done at Poros for a
yeah. I've done. Yeah, I should have said something at the start. I'm not there anymore.
No.
It was great, but it just became too much to be able to do, you know, three nights a week at Poorhouse, or even just one. Like, I need my rest. I want to take the weekend to just be and relax. But I'm no longer there. I'm just doing this. And I got a wife. Yeah. Gotta please the wife. Happy wife, happy life.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Very true.
Okay, so let's touch on a little bit of, okay, so Max is, and we've been referencing this throughout the podcast today. I did drop a pretty big cocktail column recently on Scout. I urge anyone out there to check it out if you're really interested in getting some kind of ideas from various bartenders. I interviewed about 12 bartenders throughout the city on their ideas of this kind of Vancouver's cocktail culture and where things are gone. And it kind of peaked on the idea of like where we were 10 years ago when the Diamond opened up and then the Kiefer Bar, and then it kind of just spearheaded and kind of blossomed from that. Max was also one of the bartenders I kind of interviewed in this series.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I don't know why.
I know. Huh?
You're a bartender.
Where does this guy?
I bartend.
But Mickey, I actually want to talk to you. I want to ask you your opinion on this.
Oh, okay.
So
he's been including me more in the podcast.
Yeah. That's good.
Lately.
Okay, great. Let's hear it.
You're part of it. I'm curious to think of what you understand about this idea, because the whole concept was Vancouver's cocktail culture kind of really took off 10 years ago. And it was like kind of this thing, and bartending was kind of just becoming. And then over the last 10 years, it's really kind of go. And now you see, like we were saying earlier, you can go to any bar in the city, you can get a great cocktail. Do you care as much when you go out for drinks and stuff like this? And you both obviously touch on this, but like, because I feel like when people go out for drinks now and for cocktails, not a thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people talk about it as much anymore. I think they still care about cocktails, and I think people are still super just stoked about it. But it's not as big a thing anymore. I think people are more gravitated towards like just fun bar programs. And I think that's what I was trying to get out of here. And I kind of pieced that out from all these bartenders and trying to get their ideas. A lot of them kind of touched on a lot of the same thing. It's like, it hasn't peaked, but it's just moving in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not huge into cocktails. So I know that's not your thing. I know beer is what really gets you, gives you a nice hard boner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious.
You know? Super hard.
You know, what do you think about these things? I'm always curious.
Well, so I'm sort of on the periphery. I kind of like, I have my finger sort of like kind of halfway on the pulse, but not really, comparatively speaking to guys like you. But yeah, beer for me is what I nerd out on. But I don't know. Do I care? The last time I had a really good cocktail experience was just having a bamboo at Como. And I was like, wow, I ended up having 7 because it was like, the stars aligned in that exact moment. I was like, this is such a simple drink and it's so fantastic, made really well and it was really great. But no, I think saturation point, maybe for me personally, I think everything's cyclical. So that's why it's really cool that, you know, this outcry concept is so unique. I think people want to like gravitate towards the new and exciting things and concepts. But for me personally, you know, unless I'm with people who are into cocktailing that night, it wouldn't necessarily be something that I would gravitate towards too personally. But a new brewery opening. No, I'm just kidding. yeah. And you know, on the other side of that is I respect the craft just being in the industry. And it's also based on sort of people as well. So because Max, you're such a lovely gentleman, I'll definitely be going to your place. Check it out. But you know, I wouldn't really go to a place where I didn't really know anyone unless I had heard about them through either mutual friends or an article on Scout or something like that. So, yeah. Did that answer your question?
I think so. That's pretty good. And yourself?
I think...
Like when you go out now, do you still lean cocktail first? Do you still look for that?
It depends on the time of year. I'm very much a beer and rosé drinker in the summers.
Which is not a bad thing.
My wife and I just had our anniversary and her card that she gave me said rosé all day, I think, or rosé for days or something, because she makes fun of me for how much rosé I drink in the summer.
So good.
But in the winter, I am more of a cocktail guy. I know, you know, I sort of tend to still lead towards those, you know, brown stir down spirit forward cocktails. And still beer, obviously. I mean, after work, I'm going to have a beer. Usually, I don't really feel like making myself a cocktail. I'll have a beer or I'll have like just a spirit neat at home.
Mm.
And I think your answer right now, you just answered exactly what I would think. I think it's exactly what bartenders and what people are doing now. Is that 10 years ago, if I'd asked him that question, or even 8 years ago, it would have been cocktails. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, yeah, I love cocktails and I always go for cocktails and I'm always curious about the next cocktail team and whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like what's happening now is that the rounding out of everything is becoming a thing now where bartenders and people in the industry and people that are just patrons who don't work in the industry are starting to feel comfortable going, I just want to drink rosé today. And I'm really into beer right now and I'll be into cocktails in a month or two, whatever. It's like, I think it, because everything is so well done now, you can get great wine pretty much anywhere. You can get great beer anywhere and you can get great cocktails, that people just feel comfortable now. And I think they've kind of like, they had their little bit of euphoria of like, ooh, it's really exciting. I've never had an old fashioned before.
Mm-hmm. I think if you look at where we are today, though, too, like myself, I'm 33. 10 years ago, when I first moved to Vancouver, I was, well, I guess it was 2010, so 9 years ago, but close enough, 23, 24. And I didn't know anything about cocktails. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn everything about cocktails. Mm-hmm. And so when I went out, when I went home, didn't matter where I was ordering cocktails, talking about cocktails, and my friends who I was coming up with were doing the same, you know? So, you know, Amber or Alec or any of these people who are, you know, well-to-do bartenders in Vancouver are probably would have been doing the same. So I think now, though, we all know drinks. We all know how to make a cocktail, and we know that they do too. So when we go out, you know, 10 years down the road, we're not talking about cocktails, we're talking about how's your day, how's work, how's life, you guys planning on having kids, you guys married yet, you know, like it's a different time in our lives. But I think if you're talking about the general public, what are they after? That's the question. What are?
I think they want everything now.
I think they want everything.
I don't think it's just cocktails now. I think they want everything now. Mm.
And I think that's, you know, you got to give places like, well, places, first of all, like Diamond and Kiefer for sort of spearheading the cocktail movement. And then on top of that, you got to sort of give Cactus some credit too, because all of a sudden now they're serving things like Negronis and Old Fashions. Even like Frosé, I know people make fun of it, but it's a very creative innovation and it's a very cool drink that I'll put back a few of those. I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. It's delicious. So like the fact that places like those chains are now coming forward and making a pretty complete program where they have, you know, collab craft, like local beers on their list, and they also have good wine, and they have, you know, maybe they don't execute the cocktails as well as the Diamond, obviously, but they still have a half decent range of cocktails to choose from, mm-hmm. and they give a shit. So, you know, doesn't hurt that they're cheaper than a lot of those cocktail bars.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
their margins are just, they can, you know, they're just so big. But I think that people, the masses, are going to places like Cactus, and then they're going to a place like the Diamond, and they're just kind of like, whatever, they're just getting whatever they want, like whatever they feel like. It's not so focused now, yeah. For sure.
I think everyone's been educated. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
People know what those are now. 10 years ago, they didn't know what it was, and now they're really excited. So, and it's, I think it's super interesting, and that's why it's interesting to kind of see that. And I think a lot of the answers that I got from this column were touching a lot of the same thoughts and thematic themes that I was thinking of. And it just kind of, I think we're kind of moving in a direction now where hospitality is starting to become more of an overall trend where,
yeah,
you know, where bartenders are no longer really focused. I'm not saying they're not, but I'm just saying like the overall trend of great hospitality is kind of like what really spearheading what people want. And I think it's exciting. I think it's great. Cause I used to always feel that way. I remember 6-7 years ago, I'd be working with someone and they'd be super stoked about cocktails. And I'm like, yeah, but that's like one part of what we do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now I think everyone gives a shit about everything, which is really nice. You know, beer programs are great everywhere now, whereas they probably weren't for a long time. Well, except where you work.
Oh, there's so much going on.
I tried. the actual craft beer we actually have. Well, now that they nixed off the rail, I had off the rail pale ale there. So we just have Driftwood Fat Duck IPA, and then we have
Off the Rail
Stanley Park fucking brewing. Four Stanley Park taps. Crazy.
Stanley Park's all right.
Actually,
No?
I don't really know their beer
too well.
So
yeah.
Was it Josh? Somebody shot me down. I think it was Josh. He was like, well, it's still pretty good beer. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we're kind of spoiled here in Vancouver. We have many good breweries that, like, Stanley Park might seem a bit yesteryear, but
Stanley Park gives them
pretty
like,
good beer.
Stanley Park gives them like a half chub. Yeah.
You're not Well, their Day Trip lager was actually surprisingly decent, and everything else I've had from them is just bad. So,
but that's not my personal opinion. That's not like full.
When you're comparing them to like Yellow Dog and like Brassneck, mm-hmm. like there's this tier of.
Totally.
Yeah.
There's a level that you.
That's like full on boner. To. That's like full on boner for you.
Full on boner. How many times have you said the word boner in this podcast?
I just want to.
I apologize to everyone listening.
I'm just irritating.
If that's offensive language to you.
I just think it's such a hilarious word. Whoever invented that word has like got to have won the Nobel Peace Prize by now. Come on. It's hilarious.
But no, it's
a funny word.
I just think it's kind of funny sometimes. It's hilarious. Like when you just stuff like that, you just stuff it in someone's face. Like I just finished watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, mm-hmm. and for the second time, and I love it. And Quentin Tarantino has been kind of known for having feet. In his films.
Yeah.
Like it goes way back to a lot of his films. And it's kind of funny because in this one, he's just like, you can tell he's just like, fuck it. I'm just going to put feet everywhere. And it's just like gross feet. And it's just like, I don't know. Just feel like saying boner, buddy. Mm. I'm excited to see you drink beer.
I get excited.
I can tell you're not excited at all. Okay. Okay. We have, I'm going to run through a quick questionnaire here for Max here. Then we're going to get him on his way. This is something I do on Scout a lot, but I've never done it with you, and I think it's kind of fun. If you were to go for breakfast or brunch anywhere in the city, where would you go?
Breakfast or brunch? There are not a lot of good brunch places in this city, unfortunately.
Really?
It's terrible. The thing is, I'm spoiled because I lived in Melbourne, Australia. It's insane. Every corner has an amazing brunch place, and every one of those brunch places or breakfast places does such a better job than anything that's available here. Medina and Shambar, and there might be one or two other places out there. I can't even think of what they might be. There's really just nothing here. It sucks. My wife, obviously she's from Melbourne as well. I'm not, but she is. We don't go out for brunch because it sucks so bad here. I'm sorry, Vancouver.
Wow, we're not missing out, I guess.
Fucking sucks in Vancouver.
You think there's one?
I don't think there's one, honestly.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe Au Comptoir is decent.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Au Comptoir we sometimes go to because it's close to us and they actually have espresso drinks. That's the thing. Like in Melbourne, you go for coffee and you get brunch, or you go for brunch and you get coffee. And they have like some of the best coffee in the world in Melbourne. It's very well known for that because they have a huge Greek and Italian influence there. So you can get a good espresso or macchiato or whatever. And that's when I drink coffee, I like to drink those kinds of drinks. I don't like drip coffee. It's just like, I would rather just have water, you know. I'm a coffee snob and I'm brunch. I'm sorry. I'm ranting now, but it's just terrible here. Well, terrible.
This is a common theme in our podcast. We don't like brunch
now.
Well, see, I love brunch. And that's the one thing about Vancouver that like, we just can't stand is the brunch culture here. Now, there may be a few good ones coming up. Actually, there is one. It's that one down in Gastown that opened up this year. What the heck is it called? Nemesis. Holy shit, that took me forever. Yeah. Nemesis. Okay, they're doing a good job. That's the one place.
For coffee or for brunch?
I went on a Tinder date there, actually.
It's so good. They're killing it. Nemesis is really good. Nemesis and Medina are really the only two places that I would rate in Vancouver. But the thing is, Medina is always so packed, you can't get in.
Okay.
Nemesis is legit. You guys should check it out.
So you're not a jam cafe fan?
Fuck no. No. It's disgusting. Okay, it's not disgusting. It's all right, but I would never line up for it.
I love it. So good. that was a perfect answer. I loved it. What current restaurant trend are you already sick of?
I don't know. I think the fact that there has to be trends is kind of weird. Why do we always have to have a trend? You know, just like do what you want to do, make it your own, make it unique, and maybe you'll start a trend. I don't know. That's hard. That's a tough one, Jamie. I would say maybe that. Just like why does there always have to be a trend? Let's just like do what we want. But I understand there always are trends in every industry. Maybe I don't know. I'm not like super big on the low ABV stuff. I know that it's a thing and I know that that is a trend and I know that people should be drinking less and yada yada. But like if I want a cocktail, I want to have a good, like a full cocktail. Mm-hmm. I don't need something low ABV. I'd rather just not drink. And if I'm going to not drink, I'm just going to go to Body Energy Club and get a smoothie. I don't need to go to a cocktail bar for that. If I'm going to go to a cocktail bar, I want to have a good time, have a few drinks, hang out with my friends, maybe that. But I don't know. There's a lot of like weight to that. Like I think it's great what, you know, Mind the Bar is doing, because I think that it is important that we do drink less. That's a tough one. I don't know.
If you were to go to one restaurant for dinner tonight, where would it go? Where would it be?
Money's no option.
Yeah.
I'd say I might go to St. Lawrence. I really liked it there. My wife and I went there a month or two ago and we had a blast. It's a really fun room. It's small and intimate, which is cool. The food's second to none. They've got good drinks and good food. It's the whole package. The service is great. It's really, really well done. They talk a big game with, you know, all the articles that have been written about it lately and how highly it's rated. But it really lives up to those expectations. It's very good.
And last question. Good answer, by the way. I like that one. Name your all-time favorite three spirits.
Gin's my first favorite spirit, for sure. Love gin. Mezcal. Just went down to Oaxaca this year. Had an amazing time down there. Irish whiskey.
Irish whiskey. Mm. Wow.
Yes.
Why? Not in a bad way. I'm just curious. I've never heard anyone say that before.
I just love taste. Pot still Irish whiskey is just outstanding stuff.
Like Green Spot and stuff like this?
Green Spot, Yellow Spot, Redbreast, anything from like Middleton.
Yeah.
It's buttery, it's velvety. It's got this lightness to it.
Yeah.
Redbreast is pretty damn good.
Whereas you go Scotch and it's all of a sudden in this, even if it's not a very peated Scotch, it's still got this like rustic intensity to it, which I like as well. But most of the time I prefer Irish whiskey.
Do you like Tullamore Dew?
It's okay. Yeah. But my favorite is the Redbreast 15 probably. Although I've had some really cool, I had this really cool Green Spot that was aged in red wine casks from Chateau Le Vieux Barton, I believe it was, in France. And it, I don't know why, but it tasted like so like buttery and velvety and light butterscotch notes. It was the best, one of the best whiskeys I've ever had. I think I still have a little bit in my liquor cabinet, actually. Yeah, Irish whiskey, man. The way to go. You're gonna drink whiskey, my fave.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's a great answer.
Sorry, I don't know anything about the trends, really. I do follow trends, but I don't know if there's one
Froze is a pretty big trend that you're.
I love
actively participating in.
But I love froze. I think that I just don't like the idea that we always have to have a trend. I think that's my biggest thing that I would say about that. Yeah,
I agree 100%.
Yeah,
you know what my biggest pet peeve is. Well, I'd say it's a pet peeve, is that every place feels like they have to have a burger. That irritates me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I understand why they do it, because they just want to make money. I don't know. It's just weird. I find like every place is just, it's the burger, 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 burger. Everything's burger right now.
I feel like that's a bit of a Vancouver thing. Or a BC thing.
No, you know? I think that's pretty much a world thing.
Is it? Yeah.
Everyone loves burgers. I get why people love them. I think burgers are overrated. I don't really like them. I like burgers, don't get me wrong. I'll eat them, but I don't really crave them that often. I don't really want them that often. I find them really poorly done a lot of times.
Yeah, they are. That's true.
But yeah, I find that one really fascinating. That's a big
one. What about you, Mickey? What's your least favorite drink trend or trend?
Least favorite trend?
Yeah, in hospitality.
He needs to go out
first before.
I don't go out enough to I'm not qualified to answer that.
Okay.
But I will agree with your sentiment. I do really feel that I wish people in Vancouver not only took more chances, but also made not trends, but like did what they really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then just stuck with it. Cause the same thing I've talked about this before in the DJ world and the nightclub world, I can't even tell you one place to go out and listen to really good deep house or like deep tech house. Whereas if you go to Toronto or Montreal, there's like 20 places where you can go to hear really good deep tech house.
Yeah. That'd be nice to have more of that here.
I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some places back in the day, but
like where you could just go
now,
dancing.
If you go
not
out,
that big of a city, that's the thing. There's not enough musicians that are flocking exactly. here to participate in that.
Nobody wants
world.
To do something new and keep it going because everyone's just trying to make money. And obviously we need to make money, but yeah, I just wish people would like your sentiment exactly. Do what they really love and are really passionate about and then stick to it and then make it a fucking trend. Right.
Yeah.
Stick behind it.
I think so. I think the sustainability trend that's going on in mixology or bartending in general is a really good one. My thing is that I really hope it's not a trend. I think that things like conscious drinking, low ABV and sustainability, these do-gooder acts, they shouldn't be a trend. It should just be the law. Like I think that
norm, you mean?
Yeah. The law.
No,
I think that
law.
I mean the law. Like I think that in order for things to change, governments need to step in and say, we can no longer use straws. Like it's going to be and I know it's supposed to be the law soon. It was supposed to be the law this year, and I think they pushed it back because business pushed back. But like, come on, that's ridiculous. It has to change.
Yeah,
things like that have to change, and it has to be the law because it's the only way it's going to change. And I know that that's easier said than done. We have to lobby and try and make that change so that the government makes it law. Things like having some low ABV cocktails on your menu, zero proof cocktails on your menu, shouldn't be a trend. It should be the law. Like that's the only way that people aren't going to drink so much in bars is if they're measured, you know, because there's low ABV options.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that need to be not trends. They need to be. They just need to happen. Yeah. But I think in order to get there, they have to be trends first. So, yeah, I should take back what I said about that earlier. I think that having thought about it and sort of thought about it out loud, realistically, we need to really focus on stuff like that in order to make it the next thing that lasts, you know, to make it quote unquote law.
Max just came full circle.
I like
very
it.
Glad we could help you. It's like, kind of like a therapy session here.
Getting awakening here. I like it.
Well, you threw a curveball at me, so I had to sort of think about it. But yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll say one thing. If I was ever like when you talk about risks, and I've talked to this about, with some people, if I was to ever do my own restaurant in the city, it'd be a high end Ukrainian restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like do a lot of Eastern European wines, and a lot of like German and Austrian and Hungarian and stuff like that, and I would do like just high-end, awesome, delicious Ukrainian food. That's kind of what I grew up on. But like,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, would it do well? Probably not.
I'd go have a cocktail at your Ukrainian bar.
No, I just think
the Ukrainian wine bar. You'd have a cocktail.
Well, there's a really good Russian. There's a really good restaurant.
Make me a fucking Negroni.
Yeah, there's a really good Russian restaurant in Portland called Kachka, which is awesome. But like, yeah, Vancouver, unless it's pizzas, sushi, tacos. Or Italian food, you generally don't do very well in the city. So,
but man, that view, those mountains.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Anyways, Max, thank you so much. This has been fun.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Check out, once this episode drops, Open Outcry will hopefully be open. If not, it should be. It's going to be close, in the Exchange building downtown, just off Pender and Hornby, or
Howe and Pender. Yeah,
it's called Open Outcry. Do check it out. Look for Max. He's a very handsome gentleman. He's probably going to be behind the bar sweating. Or maybe he'll be tableside doing this.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll be doing
snapping,
that.
Well, you'll all be slapping your fingers at me. Yeah.
And then he'll either give you a dirty look or he'll come by and make you a lovely cocktail. I've had many of them with him. He is really, I think, one of the best mixologists in the city. Very creative. I'm very excited to try your cocktails. Mickey, anything else you want to share today?
It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Actually,
good to see
good.
You sit down across from you and you. Yeah. In a podcast setting in my studio.
Yeah, you need to get up more often. We need to.
Really funny, actually.
Yeah,
it's been fun. Anyways, do look for us, as always, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Luminary. You can also check out our great new website, midrangevancouver.com. We've got some good work coming up soon. Our partner, Tristan, has had a really busy summer, started a new job. He's working for the Yanalina company.
Yep.
With there in Hundy.
Yeah.
So look for him there. He's been doing a lot of great work with them. We're very excited for that.
Go sport, Tristan.
Well, hopefully he's got a new computer because I think he's been struggling with that recently. Yeah. So we will talk to you another day. Have a good day. Bye.